Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 149. My name is John. Just before I began to record this podcast, the news came through that two legends in their entertainment fields have passed away. First, the legendary NBA star Bill Russell. We laud players with multiple championships and cite Michael Jordan's 6 as part of proclaiming him the best ever. Russell has 11 championships, 5 MVPs, and is part of the Celtics dynasty that won 8 championships in a row and 11 in 13 seasons. He has set a bar that will likely never be raised. Hours later, news broke Nichelle Nichols was also gone. I've been a fan of Star Trek most of my life. Her story of bringing the role of Uhura to television, the hatred she endured, and the person who convinced her to keep going with it is poignant and inspiring. Thank you, Bill Russell, for setting the standard for greatness in your sport. Thank you, Nichelle Nichols, for your strength and courage while showing us how a better world could be. Rest in peace. Now, on to this month's podcast. Forget what you have heard. Each and every single word, those fairy tales that you embrace. No, there ain't no perfect place. I'm going to vent here for the next 30-ish minutes. I'm going to be all over the place with my frustration, so stick with me if you can. The only thing more pathetic than the blatant hypocrisy from both the left-wingers and the right-wingers is how utterly oblivious they are to it. It doesn't matter if I'm talking about the politicians, the pundits, or the hordes of sycophants on both sides. It's ridiculous. And think about it. For years, the left has been pounding my body, my choice at every opportunity. When COVID came around, those same leftists were pushing for mandatory vaccinations for people. At the time, the right was correctly throwing their own mantra back in the left's faces. If it's my body and my choice, how the fuck can you possibly even suggest vaccinations should be mandatory? Did the right learn a goddamn thing? Of course not. At the first opportunity, the right-wing-controlled states put restrictions on abortion. Now, I know, everyone has their own opinion on abortion. I have my own opinion. Regardless of what your opinion is, if you're going to make the argument that you own your body and can do with it as you please, then you better be consistent. Okay, I've put this off for as long as I can. I've actually tried to avoid talking about it from the very beginning, so I'm going to try to make this as quick as possible, get it out, and hopefully not speak of it again for another 12 years. When I was in high school, one day in speech class, we had an impromptu abortion debate. I was very much on the pro-choice side, and I spoke out passionately about it. Walking home that afternoon with my friend, I bragged about how great I was at supporting my beliefs. My friend listened very carefully until I was done, and then shut me down with 5 words. What if it were you? It took me a second to realize he wasn't talking about what if I were a pregnant woman, but what if I were the child inside? In my teenage myopia, I honestly never thought of that before. I've spoken a little here and there about my youth. My mom took me to church 3 times a week, but I was still secretly into all kinds of debauchery. I was quite dichotomous. I was white trash, to be honest. I had an abusive father. I was overweight, unattractive, had very few friends. I was horribly immature emotionally and socially inept. I was full of angst, anger, and generally unhappy. Yet, despite the negativity, given a choice between that and not being able to exist, I'd take the unhappy existence, because then at least I have the chance to change it. I began to lean more pro-life. A few years later, I saw an interview with then Surgeon General Jocelyn Elders, where she talked about how they were pro-choice because they wanted, quote, every child to be a planned and wanted child, end quote. So, parse that out. If a child is not planned and wanted, then that means by their standards, it ought to be aborted. They do not want a child that is not planned or wanted by the mother. Well, back in mid-1971, when my parents found out that they were expecting a third child, I was neither planned nor wanted. And if you knew my siblings, you would understand why. Of course, it would be another year after I was born before Roe v. Wade even came into being, and even if it had, my parents didn't believe in abortion, so I would have been brought into the world either way. The idea is, though, that I don't qualify for existence under the stated criteria of the Surgeon General of the United States. However, like all humans, I am limited only to my experiences and perception. Hate to get all solipsistic on you, but my perspective is the only one I can fully understand. Scientifically speaking, I'm not a female. I cannot give birth to another human being because I'm a male. I have XY chromosomes. So I have no perspective that I can give on being female. I can never truly know. But I can conjecture all I want. So once I finally freed myself from the conservative coma I had allowed myself to be put into all those years ago, I tried as best as I could to imagine what it would be like to be a woman with an unplanned pregnancy. I listened to and I read stories about women who faced the decision, the circumstances that led them to that crossroads of choice, and the conclusions that they made in both directions. Could I truly understand what they were going through? No, not completely. But could I see why they would make such a choice either way? Yeah. Yeah, I could. So, I've pretty much adopted the Libertarian Party position on the matter, or at least what was on the party platform up until about a couple of months ago. The official platform no longer speaks about abortion at all, but up until May of 2022, it read, quote, recognizing that abortion is a sensitive issue and that people can hold good faith views on all sides, we believe that government should be kept out of the matter, leaving the question to each person for their conscientious consideration. End quote. Do I want abortions to happen? Personally, no. I see too much of myself in those babies. Unplanned and wanted. Can I see why someone would have a different perspective? Yes! So I'm not going to force my perspective and morality onto them. And just a few last things about abortion, just to truly make my perspective horrendously controversial. The majority of people who oppose abortion do so for religious reasons. Having been in that world, I can understand that. Miracle of life, gift from God, blah, blah, blah. I've forgotten more about the Bible than most televangelists ever knew. Unless you're one of those nutjob denominations that believes an unborn baby is automatically imbued with sin, a decidedly unscriptural belief, then that dead child is given the express train to heaven as an innocent soul cut down before it's even given a chance at life. So if you think about it that way, sure, millions of babies have been aborted, and that's sad. But that means they're in heaven without ever having to suffer with this world. That's good. In fact, for them, it's kind of lucky, don't you think? Second, I've heard everyone from Rush Limbaugh to left-wing comedian Michael Ian Black make an important argument. You shouldn't justify abortion with the argument that the fetus is not truly alive because it won't survive outside the womb. A birthed baby can't survive either. In fact, I would dare say even a child of several years would not survive without care. Now, there's all kinds of dark places you can go using that argument, and I thought about doing it, but I decided not to. Oh, and all I've said here is for the people truly willing to listen or attempt to understand or at least give a modicum of respect to a differing opinion. To all those right-wingers who hold up pictures of aborted fetuses in public and all the left-wingers joyously boasting about their dozens of abortions and any other similar psychos on either side, fuck you. So that's everything I have to say on abortion. Less than 1,000 words. I'll be happy to never speak about it again because I'm so fucking sick of it. And that's just one dark corner of the hypocritical world we live in. Did you hear the news that the Biden administration is picking up building the border wall that they previously halted? Oh yeah. Turns out that you can make promises to your constituents, fulfill the promises early in your administration, and then break your promise, and everything's okay. Nobody cares. I've spoken here before about the whole open border ideology. I'm not entirely sold on it, but I do completely agree that people willing to come into the country to work and those who wish to become citizens should have a much easier road to do so. I won't rehash my whole disdain for our immigration policy, but it's easier to get a cat over here legally than it is for a legitimate immigrant going through the proper channels. Those proper channels need to be radically overhauled for the benefit of the people coming in. Democrats don't really want this problem fixed any more than the Republicans do. The Republicans only want foreigners to come here if they are well off enough to pay taxes to fund the empire-building war machine. The Democrats only want foreigners here if they'll vote for their empire-building socialist agenda. Until then, it's just going to be more of the political theater gimmicks ranging from busing the undocumented to Washington, D.C. to crocodile tears shed at a photo op at a holding facility. All the while, they blame each other for the problem, when in reality, it's their joint effort that created it. As an added bonus, their useful idiot followers, who can't be bothered to think for themselves or listen with an open mind to another point of view, grow more hatred for each other because they've all been told the opposition is to blame. Anything they can do to blame the other side in order to get their brainwashed zealots to spread hatred will be done. for four fucking years. We had to listen to Democrats whine incessantly about Hillary Clinton's failed run for president and how Donald Trump was illegitimate and a crook and whatever other label that they hoped would stick. They were mocked for their inability to accept that their latest deified politician lost. Did the Republicans learn a goddamn thing? Of course not. As soon as Biden was pronounced the victor of the latest presidential elections, right-wingers and left-wingers quickly traded places, and the past 2 years have all been about how Biden stole the election from Trump and Trump is the two president. It's an absolute shit show. It's a shit show of hypocrisy, inconsistent morality, and sickening double standards. For example, I recently tested positive for COVID. One Saturday afternoon, I had a scratchy throat and runny nose, which I thought I got from being outside doing yard work, which kicked up some allergies. I was not feverish or fatigued. If anything, I was enjoying a little more energy than I normally have. The next day, I promised Gina I would make her a pot of chili while she was out doing some volunteer work. I normally wait until cold weather to make it, but what Gina wants, Gina gets. Now, purists will not agree with how I make chili, but I don't care. Chili has become like gumbo or curry, where there's all kinds of different variations. And here's how I make it. And don't worry, chili actually ties into this whole COVID thing. I'll get back around to it. I just want to talk about something fun instead of something that's going to piss me off. Anyway, I cut up a medium to large onion and one or two jalapenos with the seeds and veins removed. Gina doesn't handle spicy very well. And I get that started in the pot. I start my seasoning with kosher salt and freshly ground pepper on the vegetation. After the onions have softened a bit, I toss in a 14-ounce can of petite diced tomatoes with no salt. There will still be the proper amount of salt. I prefer to control it. And a fuck ton of minced garlic. Probably between 10 and 12 cloves worth. I let some of the moisture from the tomatoes boil off, and then I put in a pound of coarse ground beef and add the rest of my seasonings. More salt, more freshly ground pepper, more cumin than you think you need, and two types of chili powder, which I mash into the meat as I'm breaking it apart. Once everything is pretty much cooked, I toss in a half pound each of black beans and small red beans. I know I've broken the purest rule of adding beans to chili. Don't care. Next, I add liquid. Specifically, 4 cups of really good beef stock, 2 cups of vegetable stock, and a 12-ounce bottle, minus a sip or two, of a dark beer. Now, just like cooking with wine, I recommend only using a beer that you would drink on its own. A good porter works best, but I didn't see anything I liked at the store, so I got Shinerbock. Bocks are still good in the recipe, even if they aren't as dark as porters. Some people swear by stouts, but porters are dark enough for me. With the stouts, you start getting into the deep coffee flavors, and I'm not a big fan. So I get my stocks and beer into the chili. I set to simmer and cover for about 3 to 4 hours, stirring every half hour. Yeah, low and slow. When I get to the point where the beans should be fully cooked, I give it a taste to see if I want to add more spices. So I grab a spoon, dip it in, and the chili was sour. It was like all I could taste was the hops from the beer and nothing else. You know that hoppy taste. You IPA drinkers know what I'm talking about, you freaks. I've never found an IPA that I can stand, yet somehow you have mutated taste buds that allow you to appreciate the disgusting swill. You know what I'm talking about. That god-awful, bitter, earthy, resiny flavor that seems like you just broke a branch off of a pine tree and started chewing on it. Okay, you IPA drinkers, I'm giving you a hard time, but I'm joking. Mostly. That hoppy taste is all I'm getting from my chili. I barely taste any spices or the beef stock, just that nasty, putrid IPA hops flavor. Okay, I'm done poking fun at you IPA drinkers for now, I promise. I think I've somehow ruined my chili. I think about everything I used. It was all fresh. I used a little more beer than I usually do, but I couldn't imagine that affecting the taste that much. Gina gets home, she asks how the chili is, and I say it's awful. At first she thinks I'm joking, but I'm convinced I ruined it. So she gives it a taste, and swears that it's fine. She says it tastes just like it always does, and that it's seasoned just right. So I tell her how it's tasting to me, and we piece it together. COVID affects your sense of taste. Gina breaks out the self-testing kits her work gave her, and we take them. We have to wait 15 minutes for the results. I already know what's going to happen, but I keep hoping that it's going to turn out negative. I mean, I'm a contractor trying to impress my job so they'll hire me on full time. I can't say I really love my job, but it's a fucking job that pays decent money in a time where everybody needs something like that. The waiting time finally ends, and mine is positive, while Gina's is negative. As you can expect, I'm not happy. It's Sunday night. I send the email to work that they require when someone's going to be out, and I leave a message with my contact at the temp agency letting them know what's going on. I know I have to miss work, but I don't know how long. Gina can't get in touch with any of her contacts, so she has to wait to find out what protocols she has to follow for being around somebody who tests positive. The next morning, Gina and I get responses that are pretty much the exact same thing. Stay at home for the next 5 days. If at that time there are no symptoms and you have a negative test, you can return to work, but you have to wear a mask in the office for an additional 5 calendar days. Well, since 2 of those 5 calendar days are the weekend, it's only 3 days of masking once we return. So you're thinking, hey, week off from work. Normally I would agree. But my week off is without pay. Gina is required to use her paid time off, which she already set aside for the holidays. Now, these kind of situations are why we try to be smart with our money and have a savings to weather storms. A week off isn't a horrible thing like it would be for some people, but it's frustrating. What it boils down to is we're not allowed to work. If we were in dire straits financially, it's going to be devastating. And there are people out there who are faced with this today. And it sucks that one person can test positive in a household and everyone faces the consequences even if they test negative. Unless, of course, you're one of the privileged elites who don't have to do what they tell others to do. President Creepy Uncle got COVID recently, and he still got to work.
Oh, he was isolated the whole time.
Sure he was. I guarantee you, he came into more contact with people in a day than I do in an average week without COVID. But did his wife isolate like any of us great unwashed would have to do? Of course not. What happened when Biden got COVID? Jill Biden didn't stay home. If anything, the White House bragged about how she was still out there doing her so very important work. If the First Lady can hobnob with her fellow elitists, why can't my wife go to work? The White House called it a teachable moment. But how can it be if they haven't even learned from it? They can't even follow their own rules or best practices. It's a joke. And it turns out he tested positive again today. They're saying it's so rare for this to happen. But does anyone think to question how someone who is fully vaccinated, with healthcare that certainly goes far beyond anything us regular people can get, and amongst people who claim to be the experts in preventing the spread of the disease, can not only get it,
but then received the all clear from the medical staff, and 3 days later, test positive again. What part of their system is breaking down so poorly? Is it the testing that we can't trust is accurate? Or the questionable healthcare policy that has damaged so many people over the past 2.5 years? And I've said this before, I'll ask it again. Why are we lumping all the COVID illness and deaths together for the past 2 years? We don't do that for the flu. Why aren't we breaking down the COVID illness and the deaths by strain, or at least by the year, like we do for everything else? Could it be because the overall numbers make people more fearful? And again, I've said this before, I'll say it again. Did anybody hear about the strain of COVID that killed 65% of the people who contracted it? You didn't? It broke out in Europe. So far, only 17 people were known to have gotten it, but 11 of them died. Does that scare you? Does it matter that it happened in 2013? As I have said multiple times in the past, it's not to say COVID isn't deadly. It can be. It is to say that perspective and reason is needed. If, after you hear the facts, not the ones put through the political spin machine or supposedly fact-checked by those with an obvious agenda, and you still want to take the risk of going out and living your life on your terms, then so be it. If you're afraid of everything because you listened to that political spin machine and believed every social media fact check, then stay in your fucking home. Isolate from every possible interaction that could bring you into contact with the disease, and shut the fuck up. I mentioned in past podcasts, people who preach the COVID gospel and then do exactly the opposite of what they tell others to do. Turns out, after 2 years, they still can't help themselves. You loser taxpayers stay home and lose money, but we elitists? Oh, we've got different rules. These are the disconnected, tone-deaf twats in charge of our country. And now, they want to take our taxes, yours and mine, and pay off other people's student loans. We are facing 9.1% inflation, a housing bubble that could be about to burst, the decimation of the average person's retirement savings, the potential of a debilitating recession, and the intentional increase in the cost of fossil fuels that is hitting everyone financially. But stop everything and take our money that we earned and pay off your loan. You agreed to the student loan. You were not coerced into this. You knew this meant you had to pay it back regardless of your employment situation. You made the decision to take the loan. You made the decision to take the classes that gave you the degree that now you claim is unable to get you the job you wanted. Too bad. I'm not working the job I want. I have home and car loans. No, wait, just a home loan, because I paid off my cars. So check that. I have a home loan that I promised many years ago to pay, and I'm nearly done. I worked places that made me miserable. I worked 2 jobs. I passed on buying things I wanted until I could afford to do so after taking care of my responsibilities. If I can pay off my loans that I voluntarily made without asking the government for assistance, so can you. I know. It sucks that the mean podcast man has no sympathy for you and refuses to surrender his money he has honestly made through his talent, work, and risk. I get why you feel scared. Make absolutely no mistake, we are in a recession. I don't know everyone else's situation,
But Gina and I have been putting away money on our retirement accounts for the past 20 plus years. I was actually feeling really good about our retirement position about a year ago. We've personally lost about 15% of that savings. Years worth of funds. The United States is now facing the consequences of just pumping out more and more fiat currency. Between fearful COVID policies and rampant government spending over the past couple of years, now topped with a new moronic energy policy, the bubble's about to burst. Oh, we're raising interest rates to ease the pressure. So the fuck what? What about the 9.1% inflation? Oh, inflation is a good thing. Bullshit, it's a good thing. Tell the poor families out there who had a near 10% increase in their expenses that that's a good thing. Tell the lower middle class families who are struggling to stay afloat that it's a necessary thing. Their president's energy policy is making the cost skyrocket. And then tell them that your solution is to go out and buy a $60,000 electric car that will not only put them in horrendous debt, but strain the already struggling power grid. Now, tell me why those of us who are dealing with the consequences of inept government should be paying for your bad decisions, too. I'm sorry. You put your faith in systems created by people who persuaded you to trust them with your vote, who failed to deliver what they promised. Did they do it on purpose? That's for you to decide. I'm sorry you are so blind to your own hypocrisy. I'm sorry you don't realize that you berate your political opposition for the exact same things your own side does. I'm sorry you can't bring your ego to accept that you're wrong. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.